The game is the best game in the world, and I love coaching it. There's nothing like playing.
Welcome to Hoop Nerds with Billy Kegler, presented by the Wisconsin Basketball Coaches Association. We talk to coaches, athletes, and more to learn from their stories and apply learning lessons to improve each individual and stimulate growth for your program, team, staff, and self. Follow along as we explore success and failure en route to improving the game of basketball.
Before we jump in today, I just wanted to give a quick shout out to my friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. I've been associated with their products for a few years now, and I'm really impressed by their innovative and user-friendly shooting machines. They also are great people with tremendous customer service. It's no wonder why they have become the preferred choice among top programs around the country and world. I am very grateful for their support of the show. Make sure to check them out at drdishbasketball.com and at Dr. Dish B-Ball on social media. Be sure to mention WBCA when ordering your next Dr. Dish to save an extra $300 off any commercial purchase. Coach Walters, welcome to the Hoop Nerds podcast.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me. It's always good to be talking basketball, so I appreciate it.
I was very intrigued to hear all your basketball endeavors today with both of your children, and now we're here talking more hoops. So we'll get right into it. We won't waste any time. Tell me about the first time you remember coaching and something that sticks with you throughout your time as a coach.
Wow. So towards the end of my career, I knew I wanted to get into coaching. I always wanted to get into coaching. I don't think I understood how hard and all that goes into it. So what I did was I started a spring development league. My former AAU coach flew out to Kansas. We actually held it at Allen Fieldhouse. We tried to get the top players from Missouri, Kansas, to come on weekends to play. And from that, we would take an all-star team to a couple events in July. So I was technically the general manager. I ended up sitting on the bench quite a bit as an assistant coach. And it was more than I thought it was. It was a lot more than what I thought it was. As a player, you don't understand all the things that go into it. Dealing with personalities, dealing with guys that are trying to achieve things, and then trying to get people to work towards a common goal. And even now, as you think about, high school and college and the NBA, now with basketball, everyone's using basketball to try to get something for themselves. So that's a tremendous challenge that I think I learned early on, because those guys wanted to get scholarships. Those guys were playing for scholarships and helping them understand. And that's always been a challenge that I've had to go through as a head coach at both Florida Atlantic and San Francisco, is getting guys to understand, hey, yes, we want to help you achieve your goals, but if we do this thing together, we can achieve more as the group. And we have a chance to help you achieve the things that you want to achieve as an individual basketball player. So that was a lesson I learned really, really quickly coaching AAU basketball for the first time.
So with that lesson, the whole being greater than the sum of its parts, tell me, based on your coaching experience, a time where you had to talk with a player or a group of players and that actually came to fruition where it clicked for them and all of a sudden they understood the larger message and it led to some sort of success.
Well, I'll tell you a funny story. One of my favorite players at San Francisco, so he was going through a tough time. He left his shoes, and I won't name the player, but he left his shoes on one road trip. So we had to go out and get him shoes, and we were in the middle of nowhere. So we had to get him some cross trainers, okay? And because there was no basketball shoes that we could find for him. He ends up getting turf toe, right? And so it's taken him a while to get back. And because of that, hey, I tell the kid, hey, I'm gonna bring you off the bench, da, da, da. And he was struggling. He wasn't quite 100%, with the turf toe coming back from that. Had been a starter the year before. And so, he came into my office. And it really is more of a lesson for me, because what he said to me is, Coach, when I come back and I'm right, I'm going to – and he said I'll just say this. He said, I'm going to mess stuff up. And I'm like, what? Like, what? I'm going to mess stuff up. And I'm like, no, you're not going to mess stuff up. Like, no, we're trying to win basketball games. We want to play the right way. He's like, no, I'm just telling you right now, when I come back, I'm going to mess stuff up. And it wasn't messed. Okay. So we're going back and forth. And then I'm getting heated. I was younger, a little bit more inexperienced. Like, no, you're not messing up my team. You know, this is not going to happen. But anyways, I finally got to the crux of what he meant with, like, I'm going to leave it all on the floor. You know, I'm going to put everything into the team. But I didn't take it that way. We were speaking a little bit different lingo. And I remember this. So he's playing his tail off in a game. And we call timeout. And I was like, Rashad. And he's like, oh, I said his name. I said, Rashad, right? And he's like, what? I'm like, you're messing stuff up. I love it. You know what I mean? It was like, it was a lesson for me that, like, this kid, right, that, yes, he was going into, you know, wanted to be a professional, wanted to be a great player. But I had to understand where he was coming from and understand what his language was, that he was really about the team. He really wanted to buy into what we're doing. But I had to take the time to understand what he was trying to tell me in a way that was good for us. But, you know, it was always a challenge. It's funny. I talked to Coach Williams the other day. And you know, my father passed away about 4 days ago. And he calls me and we're talking. And he always said this, and I'll never forget this about Coach Williams. He's like, you know, I never coached for the money. I never coached for all the things it could do for me. I just wanted to impact young people and help them achieve what they could achieve, not just as a basketball player, but as a man. And so that's the greatest challenge for us as coaches and understanding. He did that for me. He helped me become a man. He helped me become a pretty darn good player that had a chance to play in the NBA. But he was one of the best at getting guys to buy into the team concept. This is about us. Applaud the actions you want repeated. And so, you know, that's the challenge for us as coaches, to always figure out ways to get guys to buy into that. And then it's even bigger than basketball. We're trying to teach you about how to be a man, how to conduct yourself, how to live your life, all the things that in basketball, you know, we talk about it in the Carolina way of saying is work hard, work smart, work together. Those are just really great lessons that we are always, as coaches, cracking rocks to try to get our guys to understand. And Coach Williams was the best at it.
Cracking rocks. I like that phrase there. And you mentioned the language. And as a team, you have your language that you speak, your language that means certain things. But it was really interesting that your player was speaking a language that was alternate, you know, of how you received it. And in this day and age now, it's so important to make sure that we get to know our coaches and meet them where they are. And, you know, all these phrases, so we can assist them as individuals. And there's a perfect example of just having a miscommunication. And thankfully it worked out because he was messing stuff up and it worked in your favor.
No, it really did. And it's funny, you know, the guys that I talked to probably the most, and you know, we had a little bit of a transfer problem at USF. You know, we were good enough we're good in terms of player development, helping our guys get better. But then because of a lot of different things, they were going to different places. But the guys that I spent the most time with are the guys that I truly have the best relationship. And not all of them are great players. You know what I mean? But the ones that, number one, they would invest in us and the coaching staff, but also we did a better job. The times we did a better job of investing in them, There was a much better and clearer understanding that helped us all get the most out of each other. And so I think it's really, really important. It's a lesson that I really learned from my time at San Francisco. And there was rules back then that would prevent you from that. You couldn't take them out to lunch. You couldn't, you know, there's so much time you could spend with them. But that's the one thing that I took away from that is, like, guys that I remember talking to a kid that ended up transferring. And I said, hey, let's sit down. I know you're already leaving, but I want to learn about this program. I want to learn about me, my coaching staff, our team, and what we can do better. So we spent a whole weekend, good 3 to 5 hours each day, just talking about stuff and me asking him questions, him asking me questions. And at the end of the weekend, he said, Coach, I just got to tell you something. If we would have spent this much amount of time, not a weekend, but like if we would have really invested, like I probably never would have left. And it was a punch to the gut, but it was also a great wake-up call that you do. Like, you have to invest in your guys, and I'm not going to be your best friend. Coach Williams was not my best friend, right? But the time that he spent with me was really, really valuable, right? And you have to do that now. And then not just with your best players, I think you have to invest in every single one, because all of those guys have a voice in that locker room. It could be a big voice, it could be a small voice, but it all has an impact. So if you're not willing to now, as a college coach, high school coach, junior high coach, if you're not willing to invest, it's going to make it a little bit more difficult, or it could make it a lot more, a lot better in terms of the experience they have, you know, working with you on your, on their journey and on yours.
And I know this is going to be a great conversation, because you answered my question without me even asking it, and how you would do that. But I want to dive into something you just mentioned with Coach Williams, because different era. And obviously now you mentioned some of the rules are different than you being able to maybe have a meal or do something to spend more time with that player. When Coach Williams wasn't your best friend, but he was making an impact on you, how was he making an impact with the time he did spend with you?
Well, everything he said, he meant. I thought he was unbelievably organized. We knew exactly when practice started. We knew exactly when practice ended, regardless of how practice was going. We knew he invested tremendously in us, our team, and us individually. So we probably didn't spend, and I'll say this, at Kansas, he recruited a certain type of kid, and he can recruit a certain level of player and person. He put a lot of effort into that in terms of really studying players. I would sit with him at games, and he would watch high level players. Like, he's not right for North Carolina. You know what I mean? And so he had the benefit of that and would do his research. But the one thing I'll say is, and we didn't spend a lot of time. Like, he would come down for, you know, when we were playing pickup, because he had a message to deliver to us, and I'd be like, Coach, I really don't want to hear the message. I want to play pickup. All right, like, this is my time. But I knew he genuinely cared, and so he had an unbelievable way with maybe not spending as much time because of the rules back then. Mm-hmm. You know, he would have us over at the house for some occasional meals. He would have tailgate for every single football game at KU football. And KU football at that time wasn't great. I don't even know how they're doing right now. But it made a great impression to me that he's like, we're always going to have tailgate here. And every single player that ever played here is always going to know that this is where you come on a Saturday, you know, an hour and a half before the game. And we're going to take care of our family. So you felt like you become a part of his family. Like, he calls me. Right. I'm 51 years old. Right. He texted me when he found out about my father's passing. He called me about 4 days later, because I didn't pick up the phone the first time that he called. I didn't want to talk, really. And we had a great conversation. So he has an unbelievable way about him. There's a genuine nature to him. He says what he means. He means what he says. He under promises and over delivers. And so, because of that, I think guys that get it, and he'll even say, like, not every player had a great experience at either Kansas or Carolina, but you knew he was doing everything he could to help that player in every way possible. So I think that's why he had the success he had. Yes, he had great players. I get that. Yes, he coached at two of the best places you could possibly coach at. But there's a genuine love and sincerity to him that you instantly feel with Coach Williams.
Sideline Interactive delivers digital and LED scoring tables and video boards that generate excitement in your gym and the ultimate game day experience for your players and fans. We provide you the blueprint and the game plan to generate $10,000 or more in sponsorship revenue every year. 95% of our schools generate enough advertising dollars during the first school year to pay for their purchase. Any school or college can qualify for no fee, no interest financing over two school years. We're ready and able to deliver your order to you within 3 to 4 weeks. The tables and boards can be used for any indoor sport, as well as watching game film, school assemblies, signing days, or any other event that is held in your gym. Visit sidelineinteractive.com or call 832-786-0302 to schedule a 15 to 30 minute live web demo to see our tables and boards in action and what these fantastic products can do for you. Or email sales@sidelineinteractive.com. A link to sidelineinteractive.com is in the show notes for today's episode.
As many listeners know, I spent over 6 years as a general manager at Just the Game Fieldhouse in Wisconsin Dells. I was able to spend time talking hoops with coaches like Tom Izzo, along with high school and youth coaches, in addition to meeting some basketball legends, including my childhood favorite, Sam Elke, who is in the WBCA Hall of Fame and High School Basketball Museum, located at Just a Game Fieldhouse, which is a must visit for any true hoop nerd. They also play host to the WBCA All-Star Games and Coaches Clinic every year. Just a Game hosts over 70 basketball and volleyball tournaments annually and is a great place to play for teams of all ages and ability levels. You can't beat all Wisconsin Dells has to offer in your free time. The Fieldhouse also has two sister companies in Just a Game Impressions and Just a Game Live. Just a Game Impressions specializes in customized screen printing and embroidery and promotional products. They serve businesses, schools, sports teams, and more. Just a Game Live takes pride in providing affordable and simple live streaming solutions for venues or programs of all kinds. Inquire today for more information. For more info on everything Just a Game has to offer, check them out at justagamefieldhouse.com.
So I'm curious then, how did you make sure that your players felt the love and sincerity when you took that, right? And you had to mold it and make it your own, because your puzzle piece can't be Coach Williams. It has to be Coach Walter's puzzle piece. So how does your players feel that from you?
It's an evolution, okay? So when I first got into coaching, I coached like Coach Williams, right? If you missed class, you did a 6 a.m. You know, we ran a lot. It was very intense. And so over time, I had to learn that, yes, I'm going to do all those things, but I'm also not necessarily recruiting the creme de la creme players and people. So I really do have to invest. And towards the end, I got better at it. Like, hey, we're going to go to lunch. I want to go to lunch with you. I want to spend some time with you. And, the best conversations I would have with some of my players had nothing to do with basketball. It had to do with what they were trying to get accomplished, what was going along with them in their life socially, you know, academically a little bit, but they're always fearful of the academics because they could get in trouble, you know, but just really trying to tap into who they are, right? And I didn't always do a great job, but I think that that's one thing. If I do get another shot, that's something I'm really, really going to tap into. And also, it can't always be in the office. It's got to be, you know, wherever it may be, at a restaurant, at Starbucks, on campus. You've got to do things with your players that are constantly always building up, as opposed to when I first started coaching, there was a lot of tearing down. Like, I wanted to strip them and help them understand how hard it is. So I think it's really important, the messaging. You know, I was talking to my son today about something, and I said, you know, all the best point guards, right? And he's a good point guard. And I think he's learning this lesson. And as a coach, I had to learn this. Like, when guys are having fun and have a joy in their heart for when they go on the court, they're just going to give you more. So even though practice is going to be really hard, there's going to be accountability. I want to make sure when they walk in the gym, they're feeling good about going to practice. Because at times when I was a young coach, they were fearful, okay, going to practice. And when they walk out, whether it was good, bad, or indifferent, right, they feel good about what they accomplished, whether it was a great day or a bad day, right, that we're going to get better from this, we're going to grow from this, and become the team that we can be. And so they become the players that they can be.
So, you segued me in here to something I want to talk about. You mentioned your son and the point guard he's becoming. And I think this is an interesting topic, because my dad coached me from youth all the way up until high school, and we had good days and we had days where I threw the basketball at him. And so I'm, and worse things, kind of like saying messed up rather than the real world word, right? And I'm sure that you've had those, but I'm curious, what's something that you do or have done with any of your kids that you think has made the biggest positive impact for them in the game of basketball?
Well, hopefully, and I'm not perfect by any means, and I've made my mistakes as a father, I've made my mistakes as a coach, but I'll say this, there's two things that there's one thing I know I'm pretty good at. It's the breaking down of the game, helping them to understand the why this works, why this is what we need to do, this is why we have to work on this, and helping them understand that. And I think I've grown better in terms of, okay, hey, I'm going to be really hard on you, but that's because I believe in what you are, what you can do, and what you can be. And that's not always what I'm best at, but that's something I want to make sure that they really understand. Because as kids, it's easy. But they still have to know you love them, you care about them. This isn't just about basketball. This is also about life. If you do certain things, you have a chance to be successful. I mean, basketball is the best game when it comes to that. You have to have 5 guys, 13 guys, or however many guys on your roster, all pulling in the same direction. And what are you going to do as a player or as a coach, right, to help them to believe that they can accomplish their goals. So that's something I'm still evolving, because I still, after this senior, I have a seventh grader. He likes to play as well. And with each kid, I think I've gotten better. I've been, you know, I'm blessed to have five of them. With my oldest, I was really, really hard on her. She ended up, you know, playing my son, who's a junior. I was extremely hard on, because he was my first boy, right? So with each one, I hope I've gotten better in terms of helping them understand what they can be. But also, I think that they do know that I'm going to try to teach the why and also hold them accountable to doing it and getting those things accomplished.
So let's dive into this breaking down portion and explaining and showing them why it's important. So what are some tools that you're using to help illustrate that point to them so they receive the message clearly?
So let's just talk about shooting. All right. There's certain things that I believe when it comes to shooting. I believe the last thing that the ball leaves is going to be your index finger on your shooting hand. All right. So a big point of emphasis for me is I always talk about feet. I talk about eyes and I talk about follow through. All right, so if the index finger is always pointed to the middle of the rim, the ball has a greater probability of going straight every single time. So you've eliminated left and right. And I also believe that if your eyes are on the front of the front of the rim, but you know, if they, and I want them to look at a very small part of that front rim. So when we break down shooting, we're always talking about feet. I want you in a balanced position. I want you in an athletic position, feet underneath your hips, right? Lead foot of your shooting hand is going to be a little bit in front of your back foot, right? It's going to be a heel toe relationship. You're going to get your eyes on the rim on the catch. So on the catch, eyes are on the rim, and I want you on that middle. It's a very small part of that rim. Like sometimes it's the thing holding the net. Sometimes it's a mark on the rim. And then we're going to hold our follow through and our index finger, right, till the ball hits the net or hits the rim. Because I just think that those are really good teaching tools for shooting, right? That leads to success. And so as we watch tape, because like with my seventh grader today, we watched tape. I said, hey, did you see that follow through? Did you see when your follow through finally came down? The ball was through the net and on this way to the floor before you let go of your follow through. It was full extension, index finger was pointed to the rim. And then I say, hey, did you see this shot? Look at your index finger. Your hand drifted to the left. Where did the ball go? It drifted a little bit to the left, right? So I really try to, and that's just a shooting example of what I try to get accomplished with my kids. So it's always, okay, let's look at our feet. Let's look at our eyes and let's look at our finish, right? I don't want to try to get too technical, but that's a lot that we just covered just right there. So when I'm teaching young kids, we work on shooting to the line, just a line on the floor, index finger, right, pointing to that follow through. Then we go to the side of the backboard. Okay, I want you to shoot the ball over the rubber, right, of the backboard. But the ball, if the ball hits directly straight on the side of the backboard and comes back to your hand, you're shooting the basketball straight. And then we go to nets. And so with my senior, like now I was like, hey, we're going to shoot 10 shots. We're only keeping track of nets, right? So again, when things start to go astray, I say, okay, let's think about our follow through. Well, let's think about our feet. First of all, are we stepping in the pass? Are we in an athletic position? Do we have bend in our knee? And is our chin up and eyes on the rim after the catch? And are we holding our follow through till the ball hits the net? And I think that that's just accountability, process, breakdown to get them to shoot the ball at a higher level.
I love that breakdown. And I instantly thought when you were talking about eyes and what you're looking at, I had a really good conversation with Matt Thomas, who's currently with the Chicago Bulls. And I've known Matt since he was in sixth grade, and he's the best shooter I've ever known in my life. So I was just discussing with him that, where are your eyes, Matt? Are they the front of the rim, the back of the rim, the middle of the rim? And he's gotten to a point at such a high level where he's like, I'm not even looking at something specific. It's a feel at this point. But you have to go through that progression of having those building blocks of what you're looking at and then getting to the point where you just know where you are on the court. And you've repped that so many times where it becomes subconscious.
I agree with that 100%. So I will send them tape of certain guys. I remember Kevin Durant in the playoffs a few years, they were talking about, why are you shooting the ball level? He's like, I'm just holding my follow through a little bit longer right now. Right. He was getting back to some basics. But I do think you have to learn it right, before you can do it necessarily, quote unquote, wrong. Like Steph Curry doesn't always hold his follow through. right? He doesn't. Like, he's turning around and running down the court.
And that was going to be one of my questions for you is, so when a kid says Steph Curry doesn't do it, yes. Right?
Well, I think there's also a rule of 10,000, like 10,000 hours, 10,000 reps. I think that the more that you rep it, the more things become natural and organic, kind of like what Matt Thomas talked about. I remember this day, I catch the ball on the baseline, Patrick Ewing closing out on him, and I shoot the basketball. I can't see the rim, okay? But muscle memory took over. The ball finds the net, right? The feet were still good. The follow-through was good. But I had no idea where the rim was because he's just too freaking big. But the ball found the net. So I think that's when muscle memory goes to a whole nother level, right? You know, there's always, I think, four levels of learning. There's, you know, not knowing that you don't know. You're really, really messed up when that's going on. Like, when you don't know that you don't know, right? You're messed up. And I think then there's when you know that you don't know, right? When you know that you don't know, then you can start to learn. Then you know that you know, right? And then the last level is you don't even know what you know. Okay. Okay. You don't even like, and that's where the muscle memory kicks in, right? Well, now Matt Thomas is, I'm not even looking at the, you know, not a specific spot, right? Muscle memory has taken over, right? The body and the mind. And now the ball naturally finds a net. I don't think high school kids can get to that. I don't think when I was in college, I got to that. I got closer to it. But when I got to the NBA, and even now, if I go on the court, I can shoot the ball pretty efficiently. And I don't shoot very much anymore. But the muscle memory has been ingrained, right? And I don't even know what I know. But the ball can still find the net.
All right, last nerd out question for you, because I'm really intrigued for this. You talked about the ball drifting, right? Drifting left, drifting right. So on your follow through, are you talking about the ball drifting off your fingertips or about your wrist not following through straight toward your target and having a turn in it?
Yeah, so I thumb the ball a little bit. It's one of the reasons why I was a good shooter, not a great shooter. But I'm talking about the follow through. So if you couldn't see this, but that's what I want to see with the follow. I want an index finger pointed right at the rim. Sometimes you'll see players drift a little bit. You'll see NBA players. Their follow through, their index finger will drift to the left, to the right, based on what hand they are. But I want to, with my kids, the best that I can, and they have to put in the time ultimately, is I want to make sure that their finger and their follow through, their index finger is not drifting to the left or to the right. I want them to stick and hold it. And hopefully at some point, they're good enough that they can do the Steph Curry. They can do the Matt Thomas, right? Where they don't even know what they know, but the ball finds the net.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, I'll stop nerding out on you here, and I'll get you out of here on a little bit more lighthearted question. So if you could have one superhero power, what would that superhero power be, and what would you do with it?
So not I can't be a superhero. I have to have a superpower.
Yes.
Well, at 51, the power to self-heal. Right? Because if that was the case, I could still possibly play. The game's the best game in the world, and I love coaching it. There's nothing like playing. I was very blessed and fortunate to play for 7 years in the NBA, 10 years total as a professional. Got to experience a Final Four, but you have a lot of aches and pains. And towards the end of my career, the aches and pains were so much, I couldn't overcome that. So if I had the superpower to self-heal quickly, that would be the one I would go for.
I love it. And I can appreciate that too, as my ankles are cracking as we sit here. Coach Walters, thanks for coming on and sharing with the Hoop Nerds.
I appreciate you having me. It's a good thing you're doing, and best of luck and much success going your way.